Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as always, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Heidi-ho, old chap.
Very nice.
So we wanted to talk about steampunk, and one of our sister podcasts, Pop Stuff, has addressed steampunk, but we thought we would talk about steampunk as well, because we're doing this whole series of episodes about technology that you reinvent in some way so it is different from what it originally was, correct?
Right.
And steampunk is sort of an aesthetic approach to that. It's not confined solely to technology. In fact, I would argue that it originally was a literary genre subgenre. Mm-hmm. And so let's kind of talk about what it is before we get into any steampunk hacks that we have seen and enjoyed on the interwebs.
Yep. Okay.
So you're familiar with some of the forefathers of modern science fiction.
Wait, like, there are four?
There's many more than that.
Oh, you said four.
But right, well, it's F-O-R-E. So Jules Verne.
Right.
Jules Verne, very famous author. H.G. Wells, another one.
Yes.
Jules Verne and H.G. Wells together produced a lot of work that kind of serves as an inspiration for the steampunk movement.
Yes. And if they had actually worked together, Around the World in 80 Days could have been accomplished with a time machine, and it wouldn't have taken nearly as long.
Around the World yesterday.
Yes. Sorry.
But the time machine, didn't it only travel in time but not in space? Wasn't that its thing? Anyway, so the
dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, so you'd have to have it on the balloon, I guess. Mm. Nothing bad could happen from that, right? The aesthetic that Jules Verne and H.G. Wells kind of set is sort of what creates the foundation for steampunk. Steampunk in general takes a very Victorian era approach to technology.
Yes.
The idea is, what if during the Victorian era, t- tinkerers who have been able to build some of the more complex electronics and machinery that we have at our disposal today, but with that Victorian aesthetic and the materials that they would have used during that era. So you get a lot of stuff with copper and brass and sometimes things like vacuum tubes and stuff like that, although that's vacuum tubes really are post-Victorian. But anyway,
yeah.
you get the lots of wood as well. A lot of these materials that you would find in Victorian furniture and things like that would be incorporated into this sort of technology of this fictional world, this world that could have been but wasn't.
So yeah, the Victorian era that we're talking about is the late 19th century.
Yeah, yeah. So we're, yeah, around the 1880s, there's a lot of different literature that came out around that time, 1880s, 1890s, that really influences the steampunk aesthetic. So some of it is, stuff that H.G. Wells and Jules Verne were writing. Some of it is stuff like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the Sherlock Holmes stories.
Yes.
That definitely influences a lot of the steampunk aesthetic, too. It's not just technology. It's a lot of different things, but it's that feel, especially the feel that you would associate with something like London during this era. Although steampunk, I would say steampunk is kind of very much an English-influenced aesthetic or movement.
Or at least Western European.
Yeah. And the reason why I say English is because a lot of the steampunk stuff I see is based off Victorian fashion or colonial fashion. The stuff that was done during that late 19th century colonial era, like in India. So
right.
You'll see a lot of steampunk that takes design elements from that as well. But the idea of creating this sort of science fiction world based on the Victorian era of technology is a little more modern. I mean, their inspiration comes from writers that were writing around that era, but later writers really kind of brought that back up, like William Gibson and Bruce Sterling,
mm-hmm.
who wrote The Difference Engine,
right?
Which kind of brought this aesthetic into the idea of, well, what if we take this basic form of technology and then go a different evolutionary path than what we actually in reality took.
Mm-hmm.
And so this created this sort of idea of neo-Victorian technology. And you think about, you would have advances in certain areas, but not advances in others. And it's really arbitrary
mm-hmm.
where those advances are. So for example, in a steampunk world, you might have the equivalent of personal computer devices, even handheld computer devices, although they'd probably be clunkier and made out of different materials than what our current ones are. But you might not have airplanes.
Right.
Because the blimps and dirigibles are incredibly popular with the steampunk crowd.
Yes.
It's this idea of this sort of world of luxury, and everything's a lot more, takes up a lot more space than what we're typically used to. But I think the person who really kind of nails why the steampunk aesthetic is so compelling to certain people
mm-hmm.
is Mark Frauenfelder.
Yeah.
Who mm-hmm. He's the editor-in-chief of Make Magazine.
Yes.
And was the co-founder of Boing Boing.
Yes.
And he says, the Victorian era was the great age of the amateur, where non-professionals could contribute to the advancement of science, and because these amateurs were most often well-heeled gentlemen, great emphasis was placed on ornamental beauty in their equipment. So the idea here is that the average person with the right education would be able to make advances in science and technology.
Right.
Whereas today, you're talking about really specialized, really advanced fields, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It feels like you have to be part of a much larger project often in order for you to make a big impact in those areas. It's not entirely true, but it's more true than not.
Mm-hmm.
So the Victorian era was a time where you could be on the cutting edge. You could be an average person with a good education and be on the cutting edge of science and technology at that time, and thus be able to make your own impact on it. So that is one of the reasons why it's so compelling. Also with the emphasis on ornamentation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it's funny that you would bring that up.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, one of the things that you'll find if you start looking for steampunk in a search engine on the computer, one of the first things you're going to find is clothing.
Yeah.
There are lots and lots of existing clothing that, you know, I'm sure that people are really excited about because they really wanted to make lots of bowler hats but couldn't figure out why no one would buy them or top hats anymore. And All of a sudden they're going, ooh,
steampunk
has
really
site.
Increased the demand for certain articles of clothing.
Yes.
Gloves and
oh, yeah.
Vests.
Yeah. Vests and pocket watches.
Oh, yeah.
Those
pocket watches are crazy. And some of these pieces of clothing don't necessarily have any added ornamentation to them. They may very well be essentially a Victorian costume.
Right.
But then you might have accoutrement, which makes that go beyond a period costume and turn it more into steampunk.
Yes. For example, goggles seem to be extremely popular. Well, they
a requirement with the steampunk costume.
Yes. And I'm not making fun of anybody who does steampunk and likes goggles. It just seems that they're ubiquitous. And it's not, you think about the early people who were driving or flying.
Yeah. They wouldn't have a windscreen necessarily.
Yeah. So you'd see that they'd have their driving outfit where they had the gloves and the hat with the goggles to keep the dust out of your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Very necessary. But the funny thing, and I find this amusing, but not, again, not in a making fun way, just sort of that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Sort of way. Some of the people who do, who dress in the steampunk fashion, embrace the clothing, will, you know, use unadorned goggles, just sort of the same kind of thing. But I've seen others that have, really modified them with, brass fittings and, flares and things that, you know, really make them stand out, and they're very large. And it's kind of amusing to me because I'm going, wow, you're really going out of your way to draw attention to the goggles.
Well, and they might have attachments where they have different filters, like it
or
makes
lenses
it smoked
in the
glass.
Front.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yeah, like a magnifying lens that you can swivel in or out of the way.
That's cool.
Well, yeah, it's and again, there you have the idea of, well, the practicality would be if you are a tinkerer, then you would have this magnifying glass so that you could see the very small, intricate parts.
Sure.
You're doing all this work with your hands, at least in theory.
Right.
You know, now a lot of the people who are into steampunk do not necessarily make their own gear.
No.
But the folks who do take a lot of pride in it. You know,
oh, sure.
Because, again, these are works not just of technology or costume. They're works of art. You know, there's artistry that goes into this. Although there are those who will say that, you know, there are plenty of people out there who are into steampunk who what they'll do is they'll get a costume, they'll throw on a pair of goggles. They might wear a necklace that has a gear on it, and boom, it's steampunk. then there are others who will go into great detail on their costumes and incorporate these really intricate pieces of equipment and even come up with very whimsical names for the things. Because, you know, they're using that Victorian naming convention where it's almost like Lewis Carroll has named all of their items.
Right.
Where it's this odd... You know, nothing is a simple device. They're all going to be adorned with these very elaborate names.
Like, for example, instead of saying a computer, you might say that it is a manipulator of random information,
right,
or something like that.
Yeah, it's it's some variation on the difference engine, because they're
sure.
Actually, that's a
sure.
good example to say. If you've ever seen a picture of the replica of Babbage's difference engine,
yeah,
people have actually built the difference engine.
Mm-hmm.
It's this massive device made out of brass and other metals, and you see all these gears and things that you turn, and
yeah,
that's how you work this difference engine. That speaks a lot to the aesthetics of that Victorian era, where you've got, you know, it doesn't need to look sleek. It can look complicated and even bulky, but it's done in such a way that it's emphasizing the aesthetic, not, you know, it's not, it doesn't look like a big clunky piece of equipment, ideally, unless that was, of course, the intent from the get-go. But yeah, if you look up these devices, you'll often come across names that are just, really tongue twisters, and you know, there's usually an ether thrown in there somewhere. Like it uses the ether, this nebulous source of energy.
One really cool thing about steampunk, and it could be frustrating for somebody who's getting into it, who may need a little bit more structure, is that unlike other hobbyists and cosplayers and you know groups of that style, you don't have like a Star Trek universe or a Star Wars universe or a Lord of the Rings. You don't have something that tells you what is and what isn't steampunk. So, for example, you have somebody who dresses in Victorian garb and they are speaking, you know, English with the verbal expressions that they might use in 1880s.
The vernacular of the time.
Yes, the vernacular of the time. However, they might have a, they might use a computer with brass fittings and ornamentation on the front. Or they might carry ray guns of the Buck Rogers, talking like old-style Buck Rogers, you know, with the big bulgy stuff and the big knob on the on the shooting end.
So anything
could be steampunk because there's not you're not having to go, well, that's canon or that's not canon. So it could be kind of anything you want it to be.
Yeah, if you look at, like, you know, Weta, you know, Weta Industries, Weta being the effects company that did
science fiction effects and stuff.
Yeah, they did the a lot of the props for the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yes.
They have a division called Dr. Grodbort's and it's Dr. Grodbort's ray guns, essentially.
Yes.
And these are
expensive ray guns.
Yes, yes, beautiful devices.
Oh yes.
But these are all designed after that old science fiction aesthetic, which definitely is related to steampunk, but is not necessarily.
It is and isn't steampunk.
Yeah, because some of the ideally the steampunk type stuff should look like it's technology that runs on Victorian era resources,
right.
Thus the steam.
Right.
The steam power being far more common than other forms.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Now, there are other forms of this punk aesthetic, too. There's diesel punk.
Yeah, I was going to mention that you had done something on that.
Yeah, diesel punk is a slightly later era. It's usually like World War I era technology aesthetic. So the aesthetic is different. The, you know, and you would argue that the whatever's running the technology is a different source of energy, but it's the same sort of idea that you're taking this aesthetic from a different time period and applying it to modern day clothing, electronics, all sorts of stuff. I have an example that I wanted to mention, something that I thought was really clever in the sense that a lot of the steampunk projects you'll see are not just beautiful, but are also equally impractical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
but they're impractical on purpose. They're not, you know, it's practicality was not part of the design element. So one of those is what it's a project that was created by John Knight, as in let's get up on a horse and have a squire knight. He created something that he calls the electromagnetic geospatial globe and remote view with obligatory goggles.
See?
The goggles have to be in there. But this is his version of Google Earth. And what it can do is he runs Google Earth on a computer, and this globe, it looks like a big brass globe, is hooked up to the computer. So as he moves a little indicator on the physical globe, the virtual globe on Google Earth will turn and show whatever point is in focus on his indicator on the screen. So in other words, it's a way to navigate Google Earth using a physical globe.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an interesting approach. It, again, not necessarily practical, but definitely very visually arresting, very pretty. There are a lot of really well-known artists within the steampunk world. Two of them I wanted to mention in particular, although there are lots and lots of them. Don't think that, you know, these are like the end-all be-all, but one of them in particular is known for his work as sort of a pioneer in the steampunk physical let's make stuff space.
Yeah.
And that's Jake Von Slatt.
Yes.
Jake Von Slatt has done lots and lots and lots of projects where he's taken either modern day technology and put new stuff on it to make it have a steampunk sort of aesthetic, or has actually built steampunk style devices from the ground up that do something that a modern device could do in a totally different way. So he's taking both approaches, where he's altering something that exists now or building based upon the old methods of building.
Right. He was featured in Make Magazine actually a couple years ago.
And I have an article on the site, How Steampunk Works, and I have some of his work on there as well. He has a website called the Steampunk Workshop.
Yes.
Where he actually shows you, if you want to build your own steampunk devices, he has do-it-yourself guides on how to do them. Now, for people who want to get into this, you have to be really comfortable with using things that allow you to work with metals. Like soldering is really important. You might need access to special tools to be able to work metals in a way so that you can shape them and not just metals, but wood as well, all sorts of materials. So, it's for someone who has like a workshop space that has, the ability to use or the access to use these sort of tools. It's not necessarily something that you can do just, you know, go home and fire up the website and, oh, well, cool, I'm going to make my own steampunk laptop now. Because a lot of this involves finding things in curiosity shops or antique shops or even like, you know, there used to be a shop near where I live that sells all sorts of old cabinet fittings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you could go to a place like that and sort through it and say, oh, this has the look that I'm going for. And you take that and you might repurpose it for something totally different. Like instead of this being a cabinet handle, it's going to be the corner, the top left corner of a computer display.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Well, you have to be able to, manipulate that metal in whatever way. You may have to trim stuff off or reshape something. So you may need some special tools for a lot of these DIY projects. But he actually goes through what he does to build out these things. And another pretty well-known artist, in fact, I remember seeing some of his work in the sci-fi series Warehouse 13.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Warehouse 13, you've got these interesting pieces of technology that are inside Artie's office, where he's got like a computer that has these old typewriter keys instead of regular keys. Those were built by a guy named Richard Doc Nagy, also known as Datamancer. And Datamancer has done some really amazing work with custom keyboards, laptops, desktop computers. He's really created some neat stuff, and not just in the steampunk aesthetic. He's mm-hmm. also branched out. He did some in a sort of an Art Deco inspired approach as well. So he's tried a couple of different things. He takes commissions, and his work is really, really labor intensive. So they are expensive things to buy.
Oh, yes.
But on the other hand, these are devices that are made by hand from materials that are more expensive than plastic. So the expense is in not just the labor, but also the artistry that goes into it. So, you might sit there and think, oh my gosh, that's a $1,200 keyboard. I can't spend $1,200 buying a keyboard for my computer. But then you think, all right, when you factor in the materials that went into it, how much time was spent for him to track down all the different stuff that he used to make it, and also just the hours of work that he puts into it, then you start figuring, okay, now it's a work of art that I'm buying, not just a functional piece of technology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, there are people who actually make their living modifying people's living spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Modern Victorian, which is at modvic.com, and they basically remake people's homes into steampunk-like environments. Wood-burning stoves and, portholes and things that you might see out of the Nautilus.
Big gears that you would turn in order to open a door instead of a regular doorknob.
Yes, yes. I mean, just that kind of thing. And if you've got either the ability to do it yourself or the wherewithal to pay someone who knows what they're doing, you can do that too. But just the creativity that's involved in doing that. And even something as simple as, the keyboards that you see with the typewriter keys instead of computer keys. It's just kind of fascinating. I saw one computer desk that had pipes behind it, or at the back, where it made it look sort of as though the computer were sitting in as part of a pipe organ. And it was just kind of cool, the idea behind that.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
But yeah, I mean, these are all, I mean, there's no large company that I can think of that makes this stuff in amounts that would make it cheap for the average person to own one of these. You know, this is all done by hand, but you know, you can also say, you know, it's done custom work. Not everybody is going to own something like this.
Yeah. There are a lot of one-of-a-kind pieces out there.
Yeah, and it's also an opportunity for the casual hacker to maybe try his or her hand at something like this.
Yeah, I mean,
there are plans and things like this, and not all the projects are super complex.
And that's sort of, again, that's the whole point that was made about the appeal of steampunk in the first place, is that you are creating something that's much more personal to you. You know, it's not this mass-produced piece of technology that looks exactly like every single other version of that particular device.
Right.
Right? Like every iPhone 4 looks like every other iPhone 4 until you put like a skin on it or put a case around it or whatever. But, you know, on its own, they all look the same. And it's this approach to mass manufacture that has created sort of a homogenized approach to technology. And this is kind of a rejection of that, saying, I want something that has more personality to it. It's just that this is a personality that evokes a very specific feel and era.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because every year that passes, I think, okay, steampunk has got to, like, that fad has got to be on the decline by now, because there are artists who get into it and they're really, really active in it for a couple of years. And then some of them are saying, you know, I really want to do other stuff. I had fun with that. It was great.
Yeah.
But as an artist, I want to grow. So I want to try different things. So I often expect to see that kind of trickle down to the general, steampunk niche.
Yeah.
Like I was going to say general public, but really steampunk is a very specific niche of people. But so far that hasn't really happened. We'll have to keep our eyes open because, I mean, I find it a very compelling aesthetic myself. I really do like the look of it, and it does have an interesting impact on me emotionally when I see something that's been really well designed and a very clever design. Because well designed and clever, again, doesn't necessarily mean that the device is practical. Sometimes the more impractical it is, the more enjoyable it is.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I mean, it's a human thing, I think. And yeah, I am fascinated by alternate histories and anachronisms. You know, it, it, the what ifs, if you will.
Yeah.
And just to imagine the like the what if, you know, you have a steam powered world with the internet. You know,
yeah.
how could those things go together? You know, handwriting messages and sticking them in pneumatic tubes.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yep. Yep. My dad started writing a science fiction novel that was based in a steampunk type world. And sadly, it was one of those projects that they never completed.
Yeah.
But it was funny because when he was writing it, it was before steampunk had really become a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there were some examples, early examples in the genre. And I think had he completed it, it would have been one of the it certainly would have been an interesting addition to the library of literature that supports this genre. Of course, we'll never know because it's, I mean, maybe one day he'll go back and finish it, but by then it's going to seem like he's, you know, following a trend as opposed to being on the forefront of it.
At least it's not another vampire book.
It's, you know, it's funny you mention. It's the steam-powered vampires. That
really?
Sparkle. No, not at all. Not even a little. It's a steam-powered vampire that sparkles in the daylight, but he gets invited to go to a wizard college. No.
With werewolves.
With werewolves. Right. I wonder how many more I can fit in there. There's a Chicago detective who's also a magician who shows up. No. None of this is true.
And there's a good cop and a bad cop.
Right. And the bad cop is 3 days from retirement. No, we're going to stop throwing in random references now. No, but he really did have a fantastic idea. And I got to read the early chapters, and I was really excited, and I was very sad when that project fell through. But anyway, maybe one day that'll happen. That's neither here nor there. I'm going to conclude this podcast on that note. So, guys, if you have any suggestions for topics we should tackle in the future, let us know.
Or in the past. In an imagined past.
Right. In an alternate present, let us know. Write our real world this is it email address techstuff@discovery.com or contact us on Twitter or Facebook. Our handle at both those locations is techstuffhsw, and Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.